Hello, and welcome to today's VJ Hemonc podcast. We are a global, open access video journal bringing you the latest in hematology and hematological oncology. In this podcast series, we will be sharing content from the 2024 Intercepting Blood Cancers workshop, which was held in Lisbon, Portugal. In today's episode, you will hear from Uma Barate, Kelly Bolton, and Eric Padron, who share some insights into myeloid precursor states, namely CHIP and CCUS. The experts discuss knowledge gaps in clonal hematopoiesis, ongoing trials in the field, and further share their recommendations for practicing hematologists, emphasizing the importance of the multidisciplinary team.
Good morning, everybody. We're here at IBC 2024. My name is Dr. Uma Barate. I'm a clinical hematologist at The Ohio State University, and I'm joined today by my colleagues, Dr. Kelly Bolton and Dr. Eric Padron. Dr. Bolton and Padron, maybe you want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah. I'm Kelly Bolton. I'm an oncologist at Washington University, and I have a lab that does work in clonal hematopoiesis.
I'm Eric Padron. I'm an oncologist in Tampa, Florida, at Moffitt Cancer Center, and we're interested in clonal hematopoiesis, but also how these diseases start once they pass clonal hematopoiesis and what makes them progress.
So in case you guys are wondering, IBC stands for Intercepting Blood Cancers. And from what you heard from Dr. Bolden and Dr. Padron, all of us are very interested in identifying certain types of blood cancers early and hopefully intervening early before they progress to more aggressive blood cancers. So maybe I'll start with you, Dr. Padron, and ask you, you know, we are here at this meeting today. From a patient or a clinician perspective, what do we know about this entity you call clonal hematopoiesis? And more importantly, what do we not know about this entity? And so how are we kind of, you know, using this information to guide our patients?
Yeah, I think from a patient perspective, the hope lies in the fact that the amount of high quality research that being done by investigators at this conference here is really astounding. It's a joke that we have, like, you know, every couple of weeks there's something new that we learn about that is associated with these early precursor states like clonal hematopoiesis. And so I think in the what we know category, I think we know a lot about the things that are associated with clonal hematopoiesis at one static time point. And these things range from a broad swath of diseases of aging, but also associations with how therapies both work and are toxic to patients with clonal hematopoiesis. The part that I think we don't know that we need a lot more information on is after you identify it at that static point, what next? And how do we monitor that? And is there, and I think the goal of this conference, is there a way to intervene in a manner in which causes minimal toxicity to people who feel okay, and prevents this from getting worse?
Thank you for that great summary, and I'll use that as a great segue to talk about your work. You've done a lot of work in what Dr. Padron described of, you know, understanding why people with clonal hematopoiesis may progress, and you're doing even more exciting work on maybe intervening earlier in some aspects of the disease. So if you can tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, so when you think about designing intervention studies, like this has been maybe a theme of the conference, it's really important to understand the natural history of the disease, and that's why, you know, we're both doing a lot of work in trying to understand who with clonal hematopoiesis is going to progress to heme malignancy and who will not, because that kind of risk stratification that you get from, you know, better characterizing the natural history is really important in deciding who you're going to treat, because it's really, you know, you need to have a population that's at a high absolute risk of progression over, you know, a certain period of time to like identify as that's like your target group. And so I think maybe one target group that's been like clearly defined by, you know, a lot of people in our field is people that have clonal cytopenias of undetermined significance, CCUS, and that patient population seems to be at very high risk of progressing to heme malignancy in like a 5 to 10 year period. So, you know, we have clinical trials. There's a few clinical trials now in CCUS specifically. We have one using a targeted therapy for IDH1 and 2 mutations. So we're using ivosidenib and itacitinib in this space. But there's a lot of other exciting trials, including, you know, yours, Uma, you know, trying to target patients with CCUS.
And so just to elaborate on that, maybe for the both of you, if you are a general oncologist practicing in the community, and maybe they have a patient that has low blood counts, what do you recommend that they do to identify the right patient with clonal hematopoiesis, or really CCUS, because now they have low counts, and you know, what advice do you recommend they give these patients? So I'll start with you and then.
Yeah, I think it may be helpful to define what CCUS is, and really the distinction between CCUS and myelodysplastic syndrome is the presence of dysplasia, which is, not quantitative, perhaps a bit subjective. Mm-hmm. And so I think the one thing that a community oncologist could do, especially when there's not clear dysplasia, by that I mean, way more than 10% mm-hmm. dysplasia in any one lineage, is refer them to a center where it's not necessarily about the oncologist, but really the hematopathologist that do this for a living and can say with confidence that this really is CCUS and not myelodysplastic syndrome. So I think if there's one thing that they could do is, make sure that they refer to a tertiary center.
So it sounds like what you're recommending is you have these cytopenias, they've done all the workup, you don't really have a cause, do a bone marrow biopsy, and if the report doesn't seem very clear, make sure you get them to a larger center where they can look at the report and kind of define this entity better.
Correct.
Do you have anything to add or any other sort of tips in that scenario?
Yeah, and probably, Eric, you've seen this, and I'm sure you have too, about like when patients come to us with CCUS, they often have had multiple different diagnoses before mm-hmm. they've reached that. Like a center might diagnose them with MDS. And part of that's just because they're, especially recently, there's a lot of confusion with differences in the types of molecular features that define MDS between different guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, local pathologists might not be like as up to date or well-versed in discriminating CCUS from MDS. And so just to echo that, it's important to have the pathology report reviewed by a probably larger medical center mm-hmm. that would have familiarity with CCUS specifically.
And what are your thoughts on, in this scenario, ordering next generation sequencing, like a myeloid panel, earlier rather than later? What do you recommend? Because I think as, we've talking about clonal hematopoiesis, CCUS, obviously, and we're choosing these high risk patients for potential trials, we need to know what mutations they have within their bone marrow when we do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of guidelines now when you're worried about MDS to send a myeloid panel. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense on that initial bone marrow biopsy to send a myeloid panel. I'd say maybe one thing that I've been noticing clinicians are doing, which isn't wrong, it's just a trend that, when people are on the fence about whether to get a bone marrow biopsy or not, they'll send myeloid panels and then only get on the blood and then only get a bone marrow biopsy if the person is positive.
Yeah.
Which can actually give you wrong results. I mean, in the sense that there is differences. We've noticed this, especially people with IDH1 and 2, mm-hmm. in the VAF of the mutation between the blood and the bone marrow. Mm-hmm. So, you might not detect something in the blood that you would in the bone marrow. So probably I would encourage people to, if it's clinically indicated to get a bone marrow biopsy, to just get the bone marrow biopsy, because that's going to be definitive. Doing the myeloid testing first is not part of like a well-established algorithm for, you know, testing for MDS.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think there are two essential elements to CCUS. One is you have clonality, so you have to have a mutation, so you gotta order that. Mm-hmm. And then two, you have to have the absence of dysplasia. So if you don't do a bone marrow, you don't know if you have that. The one thing I will say though, in terms of the what we don't know category, mm-hmm. is to what degree absence or presence of dysplasia is truly a biologically and clinically meaningful distinction, you know, because for all other intensive purposes, I mean, we have cases of CCUS that are transfusion dependent, for mm-hmm. example, or we can have cases of CCUS that have mutations at the same level and the same type that low risk MDS has. Mm-hmm. So even though I think it's important to define what CCUS is, I think it's also important, you know, to say that we're not sure exactly what the distinction is between CCUS and MDS from a clinically and biologically meaningful perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I mean, we're all hematologists here, right? We're all worried about this entity, progression to blood cancers, but is there other things that you tell your patients with this diagnosis that these entities can be associated with that they need to worry about? You know, we've talked about heart disease, other autoimmune diseases, and patients have questions about those things too, because sometimes they come through those doctors to us as referrals.
Yeah, I mean, in our center, I think what it highlights is that if you're a clinician focused on clonal hematopoiesis or CCUS, you have to be comfortable working in an interdisciplinary group. For example, at Moffitt, we have a good relationship with our cardio-oncologist because of the tight link between clonal hematopoiesis, especially for some mutations like JAK2, and cardiovascular disease. And while we don't know, as I said earlier, what's next category, we do know in cardiovascular disease how to risk modify. And so at least we can control the things that we can control. I think it's vital. I mean, there's a very long list of things that clonal hematopoiesis can affect. There's a few of them that are you know, really outliers in that they can cause and are probably a major cause of mortality. And contribute to that difference that we see in clonal hematopoiesis patients versus not, like cardiovascular disease. But there's a long list mm-hmm. of things.
But the best established is, like you said, cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. And but there's no guidelines about caring for people with cardiovascular, like in terms of mitigating risk of cardiovascular disease, specifically with CHIP. But it's very reasonable to just make sure people are up to date, like you said, Eric, with standard practice for, you know, primary and secondary prevention, like they should be, you know, even if they were without, you know, having clonal hematopoiesis or CCUS.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This was very informative.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at VJ Hemonk and subscribe to VJ Hemonk Podcasts on Spotify, Apple, and Podbean. Until next time.